Conversation is one of the oldest human arts. It is where worlds meet. Two people come together, carrying their memories and experiences, and something new appears between them. And as author Julian Barnes says, you put together two things that have not been put together before, and the world is changed. In that spirit, every conversation here is a way of seeing the world anew through another life, another experience, and another mind. Welcome, Ansari Saab.
Thank you very much, Sarmata.
Mr. Vice President.
Ex-Vice President.
No, but in a manner, once a Vice President, always a Vice President. Looking at your remarkable career, where did it all start? It started with your growing up in Kolkata and in 61, becoming a Foreign Service officer. Was that always in your mind that you wanted to do this? Or was it something that just happened by accident or by destiny?
Oh, my life has been full of happy accidents. And that is what I called my book, By Many a Happy Accident. Mm-hmm. Firstly, getting into the Foreign Service was I call it an accident. Calcutta was the first part of it. Then for my honors degree and master's degree, I went to Aligarh.
Okay.
And after I'd finished the master's degree, it was suggested to me to sit for the competitive examination. My own inclination was somewhat different.
Which was what?
Which was try to teach.
Okay.
But then my father preempted me by writing a letter to the late Professor Habib, suggesting that I may be talked to.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a dressing down from the old man. And I sat for the examination and by sheer accident even qualified. I was initially given a letter of appointment to the IAS.
Oh, I see. And then?
Yes. Because I was low down in the list.
Okay.
I was given an appointment. I had the letter in my hand. One of the requirements of the rules are that you have to give a guarantee that if in during the probation period you opt out or are thrown out, then you must make good money spent on the government. So I went to seek such a guarantee from my elder brother, who was a civil servant himself. And while I was there, he got a call from a friend in the Home Ministry, saying, you have a brother in this list, would he like to change his service? And that's how the change took place.
It was a remarkable accident, if it was an accident. Where did you get started in your diplomatic career, your first mission, and how did it go beyond that?
You know very well, as a probationer, you are posted to a language station. I was posted to then newly opened mission in Algiers.
Ah, right.
But that posting was delayed because the Algerians were upset with India. After we had supported them through thick and thin, the final stages, we delayed recognition.
So what was the language then?
Arabic.
So you did Arabic. Then I did you French. Yeah. Arabic, right? Which helped you right through your career in the...
Well, one way or the other, it was nobody's design.
Okay. So when you look back on what the world was when you started in your diplomatic career and what you saw it become towards the end of your career, and indeed more than that, what you see it to be today, how do you describe it?
Well, you know very well that in the world of politics, you don't regret anything. Things happen and you have to respond to them.
Right.
So the same thing happened. I mean, after the Soviet Union disappeared, a new world came into existence, effectively.
But that new world, if I may be bold to suggest that new world has suddenly come across a new shock when you have President Trump in the United States of America and how the global order is in a churn. Does it require a superhuman effort to try and assemble the world order once again?
I don't think there's an effort on to reassemble the world order. At the moment, it is an exercise in trying to grab whatever you can. We've learned to live in the new world, try to find our place in the new world, with some success, some failures.
From our point of view, from India's point of view, we knew our place. And it was a fairly solid place that we had in the world. The NAM movement and how we engineered NAM movement and use it to the best advantage of India and those that countries that we felt that we had to represent the global South. Is that now gone forever?
Well, it is gone forever, yes. I'm talking of 60s or 70s. We had a certain worldview. You may call it the Nehruvian worldview or the Indira Gandhi worldview, but a certain worldview we had. That is no longer there.
In view of the stressed relationship we have with the United States, we have some issues, but we need to resolve them and we want to resolve them. And America seems to have some issues with Russia, which we hear from time to time that they are both trying to resolve in one way or the other. So are we ever going to be in the picture as far as those relationships are concerned? Have we done anything or could we have done anything more with Russia as far as Ukraine is concerned?
Let's begin with Ukraine, for example.
Yeah.
The Russians have some justification in asserting that in 2012 or so, an agreement was arrived at. Basically, the Russian concern is Ukraine in its easternmost or northeast frontier is almost next door to Moscow.
Right.
The distance is minimal. So what they wanted, they did not want a NATO power sitting next to their frontiers and next to Moscow. And the 2012 agreement, which was agreed between them, was that Ukraine will be a neutral power, not a NATO power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, domestic developments in Ukraine took it in a different direction. It's become, aspiring to become a NATO power.
NATO power, that's right.
And Russia cannot accept it. Realistically, no country, no ruler of Moscow, Mr. Putin or anybody else, can accept such a situation. So that is one. As far as our relations are concerned, it has been a United States expectation that India would be some kind of a distant ally helpful in Asia. But we've never been able to come to that equation.
We haven't been able to, or we don't want to. I mean, I recall that when the coalition of the willing was required for Iraq, and there was seemingly a promise that we would put troops on the ground, you intervened. You always felt that there are red lines that have to be drawn about how much you can be drawn towards the cause that United States of America is taking up at a particular time in Asia.
Whenever I pass by that road on the side of Prime Minister's house, I recall once participating in a demonstration.
As a student or?
Not as a student.
Okay.
Post-student days. Outside the Prime Minister's house.
Right.
Basically, it was Prime Minister Gujral then.
Right.
That we should not send troops. Because I knew for one, I had gone on a visit to Vizag to visit the naval facilities, and the officer escorting me said their leaves have been cancelled. We had gone that far with regard to participation in the Iraq conflict. So, hopefully, sense prevailed. We did not send troops to Iraq, and the United States did not succeed the way it wanted to succeed.
So, let me just ask you this question, because we all deal with these questions all the time. What exactly is the relationship between President Trump and our Prime Minister? They've talked about it being...
Like any two leaders, they try to get the better of the other.
Is there any score that you might give to them?
I wasn't keeping scores, but it has been off and on.
Off and on. Okay, so it's still in the pipeline. We don't know what product we'll get at the end of the day.
Well, we should be realistic enough. The United States want economic advantages. We had certain cards in our sleeve, but we cannot expect the United States to completely buckle under. Our real relationship is on trade relations. Maybe he is obsessed with certain things. I mean, his early insistence in negotiations with us, he talked about something called Harley-Davidson. Now, as a younger man, I had seen a Harley-Davidson.
Right.
It was a great vehicle.
But isn't that a low-hanging fruit? I mean, give him Harley-Davidson and take whatever you want.
No, no. But that is where the tariff game came about.
Right. We have relations with the United States, which are under stress. We have relations with Soviet Union, which have survived from the past with Russia, which survived from the past.
Right.
But we still don't know where we stand with China. We try to make some sense of where we stand with China, but we don't. So what do you see with your vast experience? What do you see happening where we'll find a place?
You see, our own problem with regard to China is that we, in my view, misread China way back in the 50s and early 60s. That misreading led to the conflict of India-China War 1960-61. It need not have happened. Every effort was made, as I understand it, by China to find a solution to it. But we were not prepared to accept that solution. I think when Mr. Chu Enlai came here in, I think, 1950, 59.
Yeah.
Pandiji politically was not what he used to be. So he asked him to go and talk to his senior colleagues, being Morarji Bhai and Pandit Govind Vallabh Pant. And someone who's no longer in this world happened to be the liaison officer for that visit. And I have had it from him. That was the late Mr. Natwar Singh.
Oh, gosh, I see. Okay.
I think he would have been an undersecretary at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Pandiji told him to go and talk to these people. And the talking again, according to him, and I think I'm quoting him right, he said rough on the part of Morarji Bhai and correct but tough on the part of Panchi. So nothing came out of that visit. And the Chinese had come here, or Chu Enlai had come here, to seek a solution. A solution which I think subsequently we have willy-nilly hinted at. The realities of geopolitics cannot be ignored. China is a neighbor, and a big neighbor. And any attempt to underplay that is a fool's errand. China is a big country, it's a populous country, it's a developed country, and it is many, many times stronger than what we are militarily or economically. So, we have to think of a new way of coming to terms with Chinese existence.
But then if that's your pragmatic and realistic assessment, where do we stand with an expectation that the United States may have that we hear of from time to time, that India will stand with the United States to offset China? Is that possible? Is that?
I don't think it's a realistic expectation. China is on its own place. It's next to India. Therefore, India has to expect changes which will take place in relation to China, which are not of anybody else's doing.
Where do we stand vis-a-vis the global south? Are we in a position to be able to say that we will want to provide leadership to the global south and advocate the causes of the global south?
We are a big country. We are respected too by a lot of countries. But there was a time when without the capacity that we have today, we were leaders of the world. The African freedom movement, the anti-apartheid movement, owes a great deal to India's consistent leadership. All that is not happening today. So we aspire to be a global leader, yes. Are we there yet? No.
If I asked you to just look at the foreign policy as we consider it today, how would you describe it, India's foreign policy today? Because there was a time when one could describe India's foreign policy as being, in a sense, value-based, in a sense, non-aligned, in a sense, autonomous in being able to take decisions, etc. Now, there's a lot of talk about autonomy, sovereignty, autonomy, but is that seen on the ground as well?
We had problems with Afghanistan, which we have now trying to rectify with a great deal of criticism about it. We had problems with Iran. They're all right, but they could be a lot better.
Yeah.
We have retrieved ground as far as the Gulf is concerned. The Persian Gulf today, our relationship on the one side with Iran has receded, but on the other side with Saudi Arabia, UAE, Oman, it has improved. But there's one point in the Persian Gulf which we have not talked about. In fact, I don't recall having read about it for many, many months now. That is Iraq.
That is Iraq.
We used to have a great relationship with Iraq. Now we have none.
Is West Asia veering towards us because of commerce and for India's markets, or there is something more to it?
I think it's commerce and markets plus India's own requirements of employment. All that rolled into one makes it a very functional relationship. And we always viewed it like that.
The word that's often used by some scholars and experts is that the world is becoming transactional.
It always was.
But it was sort of well hidden. The transactional aspect was covered in phraseology that was different. But now I think it's become somewhat more apparent and somewhat more stark. Would that be right to say that?
Well, I would say it was always so. I mean, others saw it one way, we saw it one way. I mean, yeah, we had a great relationship with the Soviet Union, but the other side of the world viewed it as too dependent a relationship.
Too dependent a relationship. Yeah, I mean, I understand that. How much have values played a role in foreign policy, and do they continue to do so, or should they continue to do so?
I'm afraid I'm a pessimist. I don't think they played a role then or now.
Okay.
It was always a relationship of self-interest.
But the self-interest can be enlightened?
Well, enlightened is a term which can be defined many ways.
Let's get back to your life a little bit. As you reflect back on things that you've done, and you've done a remarkable range of things all the way up to vice presidentship, what are the moments that you cherish the most? Was it in the diplomatic service, your moments after the diplomatic service? Was the transition a very difficult transition? And then once you gave up your active role in public life and went into retirement, seclusion, a quieter life, etc., how do you see all that?
No, I walked into vice presidentship unplanned. It came as a surprise to me to be offered the office and to getting it. But once I went to the Rajya Sabha, I said something which was very candid and straightforward. I said, I am a referee in a hockey match. Referee watches the game very closely, but he's not a player. He has a rule book, he observes the game, and then he decides accordingly. So in Rajya Sabha, the challenge to me was, you know, to see that the game is played as per the rules. And once in a while, things did go out of control. But then the solution was talking to them. I never closed the door on conversations, but I never gave in to any high-handed tactics. And I think that was acknowledged by all sections of the house.
Absolutely, that certainly was. It certainly was, yeah.
So that was fine. It was 10 years. Again, unexpected 10 years. It should have been 5. But then 5.
Well, it could have been more than that. I
mean, possibly.
Much more could have
things. No regrets. Great delight in what happened, what didn't happen. Prior to that, my career prior to Rajya Sabha turned out to be several careers.
So was Aligarh less troublesome as Vice Chancellor of Aligarh? Because that's also a tough job.
You know, it came out of total surprise. Two gentlemen no longer in this world whom you knew well, Sayyid Hamid Sahab.
Right.
And Sayyid Shahabuddin Sahab descended on me one day and said, you have to take this. I had no idea. I had been a student at the university.
Right.
But after I left the university, I had no contact. But then they insisted that I take it. And I went to Aligarh. In fact, the late President Narayanan told me one part of the story, that the suggestion that I be the Vice Chancellor was not liked by the then government.
Mm-hmm.
On the ground that I did not have a full term. Valid objection. And the president overruled him. I had 2 years, but again, I used the same tactics. Listen to people. Never gave in to high-handed tactics. I listened to students. There were tough moments, as always happens in a university. But there was no problem.
Well, thank you very much for this delightful conversation. And I hope that there will be another book. Or there'll be more accidents that will make us all...
No, it's too late to have any more accidents. except the accident.
Oh, dear. All the...
Of which poets have talked about.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And good luck. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Salman sir.
Thank you.
Always good to see you. And I'm reminded all those few days that we spent together.
Thank you.